All right, well, let's, we can wait for Joe to come back, but I'll get started, you know, and we'll fill him in a little later. But, you know, the talk today is hacking the workplace, how to make the most with the least. Now, some of you might know me from the Daily WTF. You know, it's a site I run nights and weekends, and pretty fun blog where I talk a lot about software disaster stories, bad code, error messages, you know, just all sorts of thing IT. And then every now and then, you know, I'll do a little bit of serious content. Today is certainly not one of those days. So a little bit of background about, you know, what I do in addition to having a website. You know, I've been in software for my whole career. It's what I've always done. Worked at all sorts of different places and all sorts of different fields, big teams, small teams, and you know, these days I'm pretty happy with my job. Could be the challenging work, the good coworkers, or the fact that we have a Scotch library with over 60 single malts. I don't know. But for the most part, I've hated just about every place that I've worked. And I've hated going to school, too. You know, it's just basically the worst thing in the world. And as a result of this, I've spent an exorbitant amount of time and effort working really hard to avoid work. That's right, working hard to avoid work. It may seem odd to some to put a lot of effort in not doing something, but I think it makes sense to a lot of you guys. And let's jump to a quick example. So, groceries. All right, here's a good one. You go to the grocery store, load up your trunk with groceries, come back to your apartment, your house, whatever, and now it's time to unload them and bring them to the fridge. So what type of guy are you when you bring groceries back? Are you this guy? You know? Let's take a look at this guy. He is a man who takes his groceries very seriously. Look at him delicately caressing a single bag of organic produce in his nice canvas bag. That man's got dedication, and he's serious about his groceries. And then there's this asshole. Look at that, 30 pounds of potatoes in one hand, 2% milk, not skim. He's wearing sandals. I bet the other guy, I bet he was wearing Doc Martens and khakis, but, you know, that doesn't matter. Here's a guy who's carrying far more groceries than any one person should carry ever. And for what? To save a trip from the car to the fridge? Yes. That's exactly why. Because it's not just to save a trip, it's to make one trip. And that's what the real goal is. It doesn't matter that the distance from the trunk to his fridge is a mere 18 feet. If you look at the other guy, he probably had to walk 3 blocks in his, you know, nice downtown apartment. No, this guy, he just walked from his driveway to his kitchen. And it's not about the fact that it might take twice as long to, you know, load up groceries like this, or that, you know, his fingers will get bent to shit, he'll get scars on his arms from, you know, lugging stuff, squished bread, you know. It's not about that, you know. It's about making one trip, and this guy clearly gets it. Look at him. He's in a lot of pain. Yet here he's just standing there, stopping to take a picture, and he's smiling about it. This is what it's all about, and this guy gets it. He's a hero. So, what does groceries really have to do with the workplace? And, you know, why should we apply this single trip philosophy, working harder to avoid work than actually working? I don't know. There's just something off about work. You know, in all my years of working, that's what I've seen. I don't know, cubicles, having to commute, I don't know, vacation time, sick time. It just doesn't make sense. You know, few years back, I worked at a place and thought, wow, it'd be really cool if I could go take, I don't know, like a 2 to 3 week trip to Europe, right? That'd be awfully fun to do. I only had like 2 weeks of vacation, which is really one when you consider, you know, day after Thanksgiving, Christmas Eve, and all those other, you know, days you want to take off. So I said, how about this? Why don't I take 3 weeks unpaid? We'll plan it, make everything work. They said, no, you're not allowed to take unpaid time off. I don't know, there's just something off about that, and that never really sat right with me, and you know, that's kind of how I've gone to this path of working so hard to avoid work. And that's, you know, before we really jump into how to do that well and effectively, there's a few prerequisites to talk about. First is hacking your moral compass. There's a big hurdle that a lot of people run into when getting paid to do something and then not actually doing any of that is these things called morals. The problem with them is they really get in the way of making some really key, critical, important decisions that are going to enable you to work without working. And that's the first thing that you need to learn how to change. So before we talk about really how to modify your moral compass, let's spend a few minutes comparing and contrasting these very different moral constructs. Like, take, for example, the juxtaposition of moral and ethics. I'm just kidding. Actually, these are all just words, and they don't really mean anything. And that's the first lesson in hacking your moral compass, is words like this don't matter. There are two important things to think about when it comes to morals. Number one, your core philosophy, and then justification. So when you come up with a core philosophy, try to make it as vague as possible. And then your justification can follow. Let's take an example. I am not a thief, okay? And obviously, it's not stealing if you go to the grocery store and take free samples. So is it really any different if I go in there and open a bunch of packages and eat them right there? No, it's the same thing. I mean, they're just not giving it as a free sample, right? Core philosophy, and then justify it. The thing to remember, too, about your core philosophy is, you know, that it's meant to change. Things like the Ten Commandments, those are set in stone. But your core philosophy can't be. In fact, if it were, let's face it, you'd be doing yourself a disservice. The world around us is constantly changing. You know, I mean, let's look at 150 years ago. Slavery was a way of life, and clearly that changed as we became more educated. Shouldn't our core philosophy adapt the same way? See what I just did there? That's called justification. Learn to do that, and everything starts to flow. So once you really understand that, you know, your individual moral compass is really like a dial that you can turn as you need to, the next thing to get into is this concept of redefining the truth. It's a really important skill to have, and it's applicable to, you know, the workplace, the personal life, and, you know, the fact is, before you can become a master slacker, the second thing you really have to master is the art of truth bending. Some, they like to call it lying. I'll use that word just because that's what everybody knows. But in the first thing to really understand about lying is that, you know, if it's not really a lie, if you believe it, right? You know, I mean, or what if you convince yourself of it? That's not a lie either. The first path towards really understanding how to do truth bending, redefining the truth, or lying, is realizing that if you change the very definition of the word lie and what it is and what it isn't, you're never lying. That's an important part. Next thing to consider, lies are basically true, if only a few facts were different. And, you know, along that route, let's consider this. I, Alex P., am the president of the United States of America. Now, am I, Alex P., really the president of the United States? I don't know, but I live in the United States. I was born and raised here, America. President? Yeah, I'm the president of something, I'm sure. Isn't that what I said? Exactly. Now, the truth, is it really true? I mean, you know, what was true yesterday, it's not really true today. What's true tomorrow wasn't true today either. It goes a lot deeper than those very simple facts, right? I mean, think quantum, right? There's unknowns. Think the multiverse. What's here might not be true in another universe. What about the Matrix, right? I mean, geez, who really even knows what's true? I don't, and that's the whole point. So let's really look into the taxonomy of lies. Anybody know what the two types of lies are? Anyone want to take a guess?
Statistics. And damn statistics.
That's good. That's one way to look at it. The way I like to look at it is the two types of lies are the ones you get caught at and the ones that you don't get caught at, right? And that's the most important distinction when you look at a lie, okay? Now, the most obvious thing about all of this, right, is that if we take type A of a lie, the uncaught lie, it can easily be converted into the, or I'm sorry, an uncaught lie can easily be converted into a caught lie. How? Simply by being caught. But it's not a one-way street, and that's the really important thing. You can take these caught lies and flip them into an uncaught lie. That's pretty important to be able to do because you need to be able to go between lie types. And this is an important thing. If you're caught in a lie, just turn it into an uncaught lie. Here's another quick example. The boss talking to me. So Alex, I couldn't help but notice that you posted on your Facebook how unbelievably hungover you were and that you were going to call in sick. Okay. First and foremost, I would never do that because that's ridiculous. Number one, you don't put that on Facebook. Number two, you don't friend your boss on Facebook. There's so many things wrong with this scenario that it would just never happen to any good slacker. But sometimes unexpected things happen. So you need to be able to work and come up with a way to flip this lie of why you called off for work into an uncaught lie. So here's one way you can do it. Yeah, I know. I can't believe I had to post something like that. I mean, you know what it is? It's my stupid idiot brother. I was feeling a little bit under the weather, and to be honest, I thought it was allergies. But I went over his place, you know, we hung out, visited with the folks, whatever. And he noticed that I was sniffling, coughing, a little bit of sneezing. He says, Alex, you better not be frickin' sick. You know I can't afford to get sick. And he's true. He doesn't get sick days. See, we get sick days at the office, which is why I love working here. It's absolutely wonderful. But, you know, I told him, I'm like, look, I am not sick. It's just allergies. You know, I get them every now and then. It's your cats, right? Turns out I really was sick. And I felt really bad. You know, my brother, he's a huge germaphobe, right? And what am I going to do? I'm going to post that, oh, I'm all sick. No, I had to make up this thing about getting hungover. And, you know, because if my brother found out about this, don't tell him. He would be super pissed at me. So I figured, I just have to post that. I mean, that's pretty stupid to have to do that, right? And there you go. You've now converted a caught lie into an uncaught lie. And what we're really doing here is we're weaving a web of lies and deceit. And this is a very critical and important component in becoming a borderline or maybe even full-blown pathological liar. And to do that, to have these complex scenarios, what you really need is effective lie management. You know, they're going to tell you never to lie. Because, oh, you're going to get caught up in your lie. Well, fuck that. That's like saying don't ride a bike because you're going to fall off. I mean, come on. Now, what you really need to do is you need to learn how to lie better and manage these webs of deceits. You know, all these facts that I mentioned in this previous story, you know, about my brother, about his germophobia, those have become canon now. You know, I need to manage those like George Lucas manages his Star Wars empire of, you know, all the facts. And, you know, always, always make sure to have backups to every story that you have. You know, these are really important things, right? And it's understanding where and how to use these different categories of lies that's going to make you be really good at lie management. So let's talk about one type of lie. We call this the absurd lie, and I'm sure everyone knows a Mark Twain quote, truth is stranger than fiction, right? Well, you know what's even stranger than truth? A really good lie. Arguably, story about my brother, that was pretty absurd. And how could you not believe it, right? It made more sense. Who would make something like that up? That's what you gotta count on. Just don't bring in aliens. That's just, don't go there, anything too absurd. Just go on borderline, right? Another important lie to have in your arsenal is the backup lie, right? This is the type of lie that, you know, you don't plan to tell it, but you just have it in case somebody asks a detail. Important to build these, this goes back to lie management, having these backup stories and creating an entirely different universe where arguably everything is true in your world, just not in this world. The fake lie. This is a big one. And you know, I call it the liar's gambit. What the fake lie is this is an easily catchable lie that's used to hide an entirely different, grander lie. Think of the fake lie like sacrificing your queen. That's an insane, bold move to make. And you know what, 99% of chess players, they're just gonna drool over the fact that they were able to trick you into a split check with their knight and your king and your queen. Obviously a grandmaster, you'd never fall for something like that. But that's the thing, we're not playing chess with other people. We're using the strategy of chess in a game of tic-tac-toe. And that's the important thing, you know? No one is ever going to think that you're putting this much effort into lying, and that's the important thing to count on. The next type, and perhaps the very small but very, very important type of lie, is the foundational lie. Think of these as bricks in your castle of deceit. The stronger of a foundation you build, the harder it will be to fall. These are all lies that serve no real immediate purpose, but they're used later on for someone to say, oh yeah, I remember him saying something about that. Let's go back to that story about my brother. If I had just laid the foundational lie that he was a germaphobe, it would have been that much more believable, or that I had allergies, or any of the other things. People will just, it'll fall into place. So, now that we did a real quick tutorial here on, you know, hacking the moral compass and redefining the truth, now we can get into how you can actually apply these skills into the real world of the workplace. But again, those skills, highly transferable to everyday life. So, when we talk about the workplace, you know, there's many stages when you look at a job. I mean, your goal to hack the workplace and really make the most with the least is to understand, you know, that you're going to be jumping from job to job to job. And every time that these jobs occur, there's some key phases in each job, the search, going after, you know, resumes, job interviews, that first week, which we'll talk about, very, very important, sagging into that coast of a few years where you just come in, spend maybe 8 minutes working and 8 hours not. And then finally, knowing when to jump. So we all are pretty familiar with this aspect of the job search, you know, of jobs, right? And that's going on the hunt, starting to find, you know, where to look, where to work, all those sorts of things. If you're looking to work at a place that you never plan on working, there's some really important things to remember. Number one, the bigger, the better. If you can get a job in the government, you are all set for many reasons, right? Not only can you blend in, but all the bureaucracy means that your boss probably doesn't even know what form you have to fill out to get fired. And that's important. And the more boring the business, right, or whatever they do, the less motivation that everyone will have, and that's important. Right? The lower the bar for acceptable is, the less bad it will seem that you can't even hit that. Now, when you're looking for jobs, you know, and just planning on, again, not working at work, avoid a lot of places, right? The startup, you'll never survive in a startup. You know, I doubt you'd even pass the interview if you're looking to do this. You know, they're just too nimble, they'll figure you out. telecommuting seems like the slacker's dream, but it's not. It's terrible. They already assume that you're not going to be working, and you have to put an extra effort in to prove that you really are. And last but not least, avoid anything that has new technology. Right? If you know .NET, for example, somebody's saying, we are a .NET 4.0 shop, don't even bother applying, because that means that somebody had to put in a lot of effort to get that technology approved, and that place isn't for you because they have what you don't want, and that's motivation. Avoid that like the plague. Usual suspects, right? Good places to look at are large financial institutions. Not only do they have bureaucracy, but they've got regulations, and that is always going to get in the way of you doing work. Federal and state government, obviously, not only do you not have to do anything, but you can't actually get fired, especially after your probation period. You are set for life in there. New manufacturing, the big places, again, you can blend right in and no one's ever going to catch you. That's exactly where you should be applying. Look for all of these places. The more poorly written the job description, the better, because that means good people aren't going to be applying. And that's, again, where you want to go. Whoops, I totally hit the wrong key here. Jump back. Yeah, right? Hold on here. Slideshow from current slide. How about that? I just alt-tabbed and hit the wrong window. All right. Now that you've identified the perfect places to work, now it's time to go in for the kill, right, and start applying and winning those jobs over. So we're all familiar with resume building, right? We all have resumes, have had to fill out applications, done these things. The important thing to remember about your resume is that the resume is there to get you the interview. And that's really what you need to, make it. Tailor your resume to exactly the job description. In fact, copy-paste the job description into Word or whatever, and then just take bullet points and make it out of that. Make yourself look like the perfect candidate. Your expertise, let's put it this way. If you've heard of what the technology means, maybe I know SOA is service-oriented architecture, you are now an expert at it, as am I. That's what expertise is, right? The other thing about working at places, what is really work? After all, have you bought some? Have you heard of the place? One might arguably say that you've worked there. And when you do that, try to pick a place that they'll never catch that you never actually worked there. Places that went out of business, gold mine. Because you cannot call to verify that. This is important stuff, right? So once you get the job, once you, it's time for the interview and, there's tons of books, seminars, and all sorts of stuff for that, and whatever. That is far beyond the scope of this, but acing the interview, it's very, very important to do because that's what's going to get you the job. But once it comes time for the job offer, during the interview, right, you're one of those interview techniques, what you want to also do while you're in the interview is to really understand what about this place you can use in the next phase, which is the first week. This is, things like gauging the competency of your boss. If he is a complete moron and doesn't know Java from coffee, perfect. Because that is the best boss, because you can say anything and he'll buy it up. This is also a good place while you're in the interview to drop a few of those foundational lies. Maybe mention that you travel a lot. Just things that you can use later to build on some other great things. After the interview, right, after you get that job offer, this is where it really is important. They're going to make you an offer. They're going to say, what are your salary requirements? Lie. Just double what you made at your last job. And then ask for more. Don't be afraid to negotiate. In fact, if you're really, really bold, come in there with a fake W-2 just in case they ask for it. No one expects that. After all, you do deserve the pay that you ask for. That's kind of a rule, right? Also, while you're in this negotiation phase, really downplay how little vacation time and days off you're actually going to use. You never get sick, you never go on vacation, because that's really going to play into a part of how they're going to just, you know, feel okay paying you that much more. So, you know, you've aced the interview, got the great resume out there, just negotiated yourself a wonderfully higher salary. Now it's time to settle in and have that first week. Well, that's the thing. There's no settling in here. This is the most important week of your 1 to 2 year career, and this is where you really need to haul ass. I mean, let's think about this. At all the jobs you've had, what was the week that you probably did the least amount of work? The first week, right? That's when you're doing all your paperwork and getting acclimated with the place, learning things. No, in this first week, you need to go in there and make the biggest first impression ever. Work like you've never worked before. And here's why. Think of it this way, right? If Kobe Bryant just all of a sudden lost his magic, right? It'd be a really long time before anyone noticed. They'd just be thinking maybe he's having an off day, an off week, an off month, an off season. That's what you need to do. Everything that you do from here on out will just be an off day. All it takes is 1 week of hard work. Again, this is where this first week, in addition to hauling ass, doing lots of hard work, lay your foundational lies. As you're there working like a madman, make sure to introduce fake anxiety reflexes and stressors. You know, maybe you're the type of person who paces or gruffs or, you know, even swears. Who knows when stressful things come up? The key thing is to get your coworkers to associate these things that you do with the fact that you're working really, really hard. And just like Pavlov's dog, all you have to do is ring the bell, and they're going to start to salivate. So all you have to do after you've established these is just, oh, fuck, just what a day. And they will just think that you're hard at work. Now, couple these foundational quirks and stressors with organizational weak spots. So let's talk about banks and regulations. Isolate and identify where all of these weak spots are, because that's exactly what you're going to need to utilize to give as excuses for why you're not doing anything. And people will believe it too, because you can just say you're frustrated at all of those things. The real important cherry on top of all of this in your foundational lie is, you know, the big life events. You know, these happen to all of us. New houses, weddings, divorces, I don't know. Plant the seeds for all of these as early as possible, because you're going to need to start planning and using these as you move on. Just think of the wonderful excuses that things like a family can provide. You know, the kids and family, right? These can be the cornerstone to your fortress of deception. But it's really hard to pull off. Think of the benefits, though, if you can do it. Got to pick the kids up from daycare. Oh, no, Johnny's sick. The wife, guys, you got to help her. Or maybe ex-wife if you like drama. I don't know. The list of excuses that you can pull from your family is endless, but also is the work in pulling it off, too. I mean, you need names. You need birth dates. You need to remember that they grow up, too, and have new pictures for your kids. A good pro tip, if you're going to do this, use your own baby pictures. You know, because they look like you, and, you know, it'll totally work. But again, having fake kids and fake family, almost like having a real family. So just be prepared to pull that off. Some people, they have this thing, karma, that they're into. I'm a believer in karma a little bit. And this one, yeah, this one does give you some negative karma points. Of course, I justify the negative karma points with all the positive things that I do, and everything balances out. But fake kids, you know, if you get caught, lots of negative karma. It's up there with lying about your dead grandmother, right? And, you know, speaking of that, avoid the dead relative's excuse. Not only is it amateur hour for the professional slacker, it's a terrible, terrible lie. I mean, first and foremost, let's go back to karma, right? You've got a lot of that to deal with, and karma's a serious bitch, right? But not only that, you're fucking with other people's emotions. And since they really want to, you know, show their support, maybe go to the wake, things like that, you know, that's just more bad stuff. But, you know, let's say that you're striving to be that much of a scumbag, and you're fine with it. Okay, but let's look at the practical matters with the dead relative excuse. They publish obituaries in the paper. What are you going to do, publish a fake one? What if a coworker shows up to the fake funeral? You're going to say it's private, or if you say it's an out-of-town dead relative, they might want to send flowers. All of these details that you have to pull off are crazy. And the worst part of it is, you know, what I call the value risk catch 22. The closer the dead relative is to you, the more support they're going to want to show, and obviously the more time off you're going to get. But if it's your great aunt, what, you're going to get a day out of that? Just not worth all the hassle. And besides, people already just don't believe the dead relative thing anyway. So, you know, you've already got that. So my advice, stay far, far away from this excuse. So, you know, after this weak death march, right, and, you know, your foundational lie building, now comes the time for the long coast. There are so many endless generic techniques that you can employ during your relatively short tenure, but being more specific always wins. Obviously, without knowing all these things, you know, that you would learn in your first week, it's kind of hard to give specific examples, but there are some really good generic strategies you can use that are applicable anywhere. So let's talk about some of those. First and foremost, master the art of miscommunication. So let's say the boss asks you to build, I don't know, a customer management system. So you spend a few months, you know, toiling away. Then you deliver the most awesome, super sweet web-based CRM the world has ever seen. The boss says, oh, wow, this is awesome, but, you know, we really need it as a desktop app. All that time wasted because of a simple miscommunication. Obviously, a very simple example, but similar things have happened to all of us, right? The simple miscommunication. That's what you need to leverage, right? So, you know, the trick here is to have intentional miscommunication. You know, when you're told to do something, figure out a way to do something entirely different, and then deliver that. But don't deliver the whole thing, just deliver a facade. Because as soon as you hand them the wrong thing, they're never going to open it up too much and say, oh, you just put on an interface and didn't actually write anything. And if you do just as a backup, just throw an error as soon as they click a button. They're never going to look past that, and the best thing is, no one takes the blame except for the process, and that is the best person to blame, process. Because then you can work together, hand in hand with your boss and management, to improve things. Status, right? This is an important one. You know, when the boss asks, hey Alex, did you get that change done in production yet? Yeah, it's basically done. Now, they're not going to ask further questions, but in case they do, be prepared for those. Well, it's basically done. Did I get it into QA yet? Well, no, but that's next on my list. Oh, well, is it compiled and installed in testing? Not just yet, but it's nearly there. Oh, well, no, I didn't check in my code yet, but I'm about to. I mean, in fact, that's what I was just going to do. Well, did I write it? No. I mean, it's all up here. All I really need to do is put the fingers to the keyboard and it's done. Bam, right? That's what I said, basically in production, right? Mastering the status. BYOB, right? Bring your own bug. This analogy is great with software, but I've heard that crosses industries, and in fact, it was invented by auto workers at GM. The idea is to plant a problem, very subtly, of course, an everyday mistake that anyone could make. And this problem leads to unintended consequences. When you're tasked with fixing it by someone who discovers it, it will inevitably lead to a very long discovery process. I mean, let's think about this. How long does it take to fix a bug? I don't know, as long as it takes. and you'll eventually fix it, but it'll just take you quite a while. But you'll also be the hero who can solve this problem. The auto workers, they would often forget to tight certain screws, especially around triple pay holiday time, and that meant lots of extra hours that were needed to catch up with the production schedule. Apply this really well with software, but it works in any industry. Now, a lot of people have heard this quote from Donald Rumsfeld. I remember it was all over the place, right? Got a lot of criticism, right? John Stewart, he had a field day with it. But I mean, honestly, this is a wonderfully eloquent way of expressing the state of knowledge. Once you can understand these, and if you can explain these and use very similar words to explain these to other people, then you can get the golden, golden something of excuses, and that is the unknown unknowns. You know, imagine for a minute, let's say you hired a carpenter to build you some stairs or something. And then he comes back and says, well, never built stairs before, and I don't even know how much it's going to take for me to tell you how long it's going to take to build those stairs. But here's a bill for the 2 hours I just spent, you know, telling you that I don't know what to do. That's basically what salary is, if you think about it, right? And, you know, that's exactly what you need to work for, is the unknown unknowns. The key thing with using the unknown unknowns is that they're wonderful for extending deadlines. One thing that maybe some of you have already done is fun with email attachments, right? I mean, how many times have you just forgotten to attach something? Whoops, silly me. Or, I don't know, email attachments get corrupted pretty easily, especially when you open them in Notepad and just start typing a bunch of random letters on them. And then, I don't know, sometimes it's really easy to send the entirely wrong file. Little easy mistakes that everyone can make, but that just bought you a week. Falling ill, that's another great thing, right? I mean, how is it your fault if you get sick? Even though, I mean, you never get sick, right? You were very clear about that. It's very unlikely. How can you be expected to meet a deadline if you develop the flu or something, right? The good one is also to blame your tools, you know, Outlook. I actually really miss Lotus Notes. I don't know if any of you have used it, but Lotus Notes was wonderful. It never worked for anything. That's the whole point, right? I mean, Outlook, it's got some good problems. Just make sure to blame those. Oh my God, I set a reminder. What the hell, it didn't pop up? I have a bug. I need to get IT on this to fix this because this is unacceptable. We cannot be missing deadlines like this. Not cool. But, you know, talking about sick and illness, there's some very, very important things to remember. Well, first and foremost, a sick day is just another day for a vacation day, right? Mental health day, whatever you want to do. But if you're not using all of your sick days and then some, it's like just throwing out money. And who would do that? It doesn't even make sense. Key thing to remember is if you get sick, that's when you go into work, because it proves that you are a trooper and that you really are that dedicated that you're going to come in while you're puking all over the place, having a fever. And if you call off sick, that must mean you are really, really, really sick. Right? So the other thing too, if you ever need it, doctor's notes and prescriptions, very, very easy to get. Especially if you find the right doctor, just shop around. I have seen doctor's notes, unbelievable. I learned this very early on, actually, in high school. We had a big swimming pool, right? And as part of gym class for like, I don't know, 3 weeks a month, everyone went swimming. Well, you know, I don't mind swimming, but I mind doing something other than sitting and doing nothing. So what did I develop? Oddly enough, a chlorine sensitivity, and my doctor just gave me a note. Bam, 3 weeks study hall. Worked out wonderfully. That's how easy it is to do. Just read the, you know, use the internet to read symptoms. Your doctor will write you a note because what does he care, right? Another key thing, you know, talking about home and that is take your work home with you. Remember, not telecommuting. Screw that. Don't even go there. Avoid telecommuting as much as possible. But when you go there, just make sure, say, oh, I have a personal phone. Is there any way I can get my work email on this? I'd really love to stay connected. And then when you get that, hopefully you do, just send random emails at odd hours. They're just going to think you're that dedicated. And here's the key thing. Finish your work at home. And there's a finish there. And what I mean by that is just do it all at work, then stress out, oh my God, I can't believe how long this is taking, right? Then just take it home and say you stayed up till 2 a.m., send that email using the delay feature of Outlook, and there you go. You stayed up all night fixing a problem that you really just did at work. Let's see what we have next, right? Always look busy. Remember those stressors, right? Get yourself, you know, one of those Franklin day planners. Don't go electronic, because this is going to show that you're not only dedicated, but you're so dedicated you don't even want to mess with technology, because paper always works. Carry it around with you everywhere you go. Take little notes. You could just really be drawing pictures of dicks in there. Who cares, right? But just make it look like you're working hard. When it comes time for company picnics, company lunches, anything like that, always say, oh, guys, I don't know. I'm trying to get this stuff done, and I really wanted to get it done today. Now, that doesn't mean you actually have to skip. Just say you're going to skip and then say, God, you're never going to believe it. I got this shit done right at the last minute. And hey, free lunch, right? Of course, if you're going to be, spending all your time not working, you really need to find activities to fill the day with. Very importantly, don't surf the internet. I worked at a place, a large financial institution, as it so happened. And this was a firsthand lesson, right? I surfed the internet all day long. And I had, my boss had a very serious one-on-one with me. Just very sternly took a stack of paper, actually it was about a ream, and just plunked it on the table. And he says, Alex, do you know what this is? I said, oh, flipping through it, I see web addresses, URLs. So this is your internet activity over the past 3 days. You have broken company records. Now, fortunately, this was many years ago before they set automatic firing policies. And again, I just blame the tools and say, oh, I must have left my computer on auto refresh. It does that. You can do that to have pages load faster. Blame the tools, but still, that's where I learned my lesson. There's a lot of things you can do, though. Write a book. If you're a coder, just write it in Visual Studio, right? It doesn't look like Word. Who's going to notice? Programmers, a lot of people, they like to listen to music. Well, just listen to podcasts, the radio, books on tape or books on CD. That's a great way to fill the day. Learn to draw. That's something I did. I still can't, but I tried. I did a lot of doodling. It looks like, again, scribbling in your day planner. Very important. A big thing, this is, a double whammy if you can get it, just do freelance work at work. That way, you can get paid to do work that you're doing while at work. It's wonderful. Again, some people could call that unethical, but again, remember, that's just a word, and you can justify that by saying, well, what's really the difference? Some people get their work done in 5 minutes, in 5 hours, I'm just a quick worker. Again, a justification, but getting paid to work while working, wonderful. Another good thing to do to avoid being in the office, because that's a hard thing to do, right? We talked about sick days, vacation leveraging, right? Being at two places at once is the perfect way to not be any place at all. Really simple thing to do. Works great when you have multiple locations, or if you have a campus, oh my God, this is what you can do all the time, right? All you have to do is schedule yourself in as many meetings as possible. Do a pop-in to one just so you make an appearance, and then just don't go to anything, and you can just go off and do whatever you want. Performance reviews, right? This is another important thing, because inevitably, when it comes time for your performance review, it's going to be really, really bad. And anyone who's done a performance review, how they work is they give you a form to fill out yourself, where you rate yourself and kind of do that. Put yourself at like zero. Go as low as possible. And when it comes time for the review, just act terribly nervous. Pull out those stressors that you've been building as a foundation along, you know, over the past year. And all those excuses that you developed in your canon of lies, bring them out. This is why you did so poorly. And just sit there and like, oh, I can't believe how poor of a year this has been. It's, you know, the marriage just puts so much stress. Again, props, don't forget your props. You know, so much stress on me. Oh, I can't believe it. And this is unfair to you. You know, I really should have been better at what I'm doing. And I'm hoping that we can really work together over the next year to just kick things out of the park. You know, deliver wonderfully. I want results. That's what I'm here to do. I don't just want to come in and not do anything. And what's really nice here is if you can sink to like as low as possible, all you really need to do is show a little bit of improvement. Maybe instead of just working 8 minutes a day, bump it up to 11. That's a pretty big improvement, right? And you can show improvement, you're good for at least another year or two. And last but not least, you know, the art of the discreet napping. Now, an old joke is, you know, or excuse is the pretending to prayer. Oh, I was just, you know, sorry. Oh, I was praying. Again, amateur hour, right? You can do a lot better. It is a fact that you can sleep with your eyes open. I learned to do this. It's a skill. Again, you lean on the desk, force your eyelids open, and it works. People will not notice it. Fun places to nap, the server room. This is why it's wonderful to get a job as like a network administrator, because you can spend all day there if you need to diagnose problems. This is so cool, especially on hot days. All that fans love sleeping there. And if you want to sleep at your desk, that's also possible to do. Find the cubicle that you can crawl under the desk, angle your chair just possibly. No one's ever going to notice that you're down there. And when they catch you, just say you're fiddling with a cord. Yeah, simple stuff. So, all these excuses, right? Now is time for, you know, after your year, 2, 3, 4. I've seen people pull this off for 8 years. Your time comes, right? And some of the biggest signs of trouble to look out for is resentment. When people just start hating you and giving you the eye, it's almost time to go, right? You know, your lies, when you have to start pulling out your backup lies, if you have to pull up your backup lies, you've already gone in too far. And the big thing is this whole notion of getting called out, right? So what does getting called out mean, right? There's three key words here, okay? Tomfoolery. This is a questionable action with a suspected ulterior motive. Well, he said he had a doctor's appointment, but I suspect tomfoolery. Ballyhoo. A state in which many future actions, questionable or otherwise, are strongly considered to be tomfoolery. Somewhat synonymous with, I've got my eye on you. As an example, this is the third time he's late. I'm thinking there's some ballyhoo afoot. The big one, this is one that you really need to watch out for, is shenanigans. Shenanigans are similar to ballyhoo. But it's a state in which not only future actions, but past actions are brought up for judgment, and things that you did in the future and in the past are strongly considered to be tomfoolery. Example, that's it, I'm calling shenanigans, and there is no way he had a doctor's appointment last week either. That is trouble. Sooner or later, no matter how good you are at this, your web will start to fold in on itself. It's really hard to maintain a fake family for 8 years. It's tough, you know, nobody can do it. At some point, if they call shenanigans on you, it's all over, right? Leave while you can still get a reference. And then just do it all over again. But make sure to take a few weeks in between, because you worked hard and you earned a break. So, that's it for me. Any questions? Did it just go away?
It's on your screen.
No questions? Awesome. Oh.
I also have a question. It was really shocked.
Thanks. So I don't really have a question. I'm just shocked that I didn't realize that I was doing this. So, like, I work for a university, and, you know, about 4 years ago, I realized that I could just not show up for a month and no one would notice. And so it was like, well, I could, you know, find another job that's more fulfilling, yada, yada, yada. Or I could just make what I make now and, you know, dick around all day. And so I was, you know, in my mind, speaking of justification, it was always, you know, well, you know, I'm a valuable person and I'm not being fully utilized. And so, you know, it's sort of a tax on them for not seeing my value.
You know what you need to do? You need to ask for a raise.
Right. And so, yeah, I'm just shocked. I think maybe, you know, if you want to continue your work, you should maybe identify people who are doing this unconsciously and maybe actually accuse productive people of doing this.
That's a great slide to add, is to blame other people for doing exactly what you're doing. Nobody's going to suspect it. So complain about how lazy other people are. I like that.
Right. So that's all I had.
I haven't had a real job for about 16 years. I've been doing a lot of consulting and contracting, and what really hit home for me in your presentation, Alex, is often the exact behavior you're describing is the deliverable, where if you do that, the higher-ups are happy, they like the outcomes, they're very satisfied with your work. God forbid you try to do something. You can't do that. You wreck the whole system. It's kind of awesome when you think about it.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's important to, if you want to work really hard and, you know, have a fulfilling job, working at a place where there's other people like this, it's going to just kill you because, you know, this is kind of, I've honed my skills at not working by working at places where I actually wanted to work. And, you know, that's where you learn how to not work, is at a place like that. So, cool. Any other questions, comments, anecdotes? No? Good stuff. Oh.
I teach college English, and actually some of the things that you've been saying, I've been catching students doing to me. And so you've actually given me some hints on how to observe and see a lot more things that I didn't know.
Yeah, all the rules of school and there's lots of techniques that can be applied in, you know, school. But unfortunately, a lot of those have just been killed by the internet and people able to search for plagiarized materials. One of my favorites was plagiarizing an entire book and then taking their bibliography as your own. Would work out wonderfully, but people can search for these things, and I don't know. I guess the balance now is, can't you go to like India or Chinese websites where they'll just write your term papers for like $5 or something? I don't know, I guess that's what you have to pay for it now, but, you know, a good way, I suppose.
So I've been lucky enough not to encounter this personally yet, but I've heard a lot of anecdotes where, in the constant struggle to promote the appearance of doing work instead of actually doing work, some companies will kind of set traps for you. Like, they'll give you vacation days or sick days, but if you actually take them, it's not okay. You know, so can you like predict that, or what do you do about that? Is that just something you have to kind of roll with the punches, or is there some reaction you can have to that to fit into this?
It's all about the foundational lies, right? You know, sick days, you never use them because you come to work sick. Unless you develop like something really serious, then you're saying, and of course it's reasonable if you get malaria to stay at home, right? You can't go to the office if you're in a hospital bed. So that's how you combat the sick day thing, is just show up to work sick, you know. Vacation, you know, I don't know, that's a tough one. I would just say try to find a job where they make you take vacation, you know. I like that. Or you get paid for it, that'd be even better.
Just a helpful, fun one for everyone in their new endeavor. One of your foundational lies is just limp on your first day, especially if it's a rainy day. And then from that point forward, you have joint problems, right? And when the rain acts up and you can't walk, obviously being at work would probably be a bad idea. It's probably better if you just, you have pain meds, you don't like to take them, but when you do take them, you need to be home. And so, you know, just one for the room. I don't work for FARC.com.
This is being recorded, by the way.
I want to know what to do about the people who do this stuff incompetently and raise the vigilance level. We once had a contractor who kind of drew attention to himself by sleeping at his desk with his feet on the desk. We have pictures of it. What do we do about somebody like that?
Well, challenging work, valuing their suggestions, basically anything to make them feel like they're actually a contributing member of society, those all go good ways to building motivation because, yeah, these sort of things you do once you get completely unmotivated. But at the end of the day, if you know, the workplace is, I don't know, like a really boring bank and everyone has to work in COBOL or something like that, I mean, you know, just join the guy sleeping, right? You know, don't bother trying to fix it.
So if you create a fake family, let's say, and a young person like myself with all this free time that I'm not going to be working anymore, I'm able to socialize and find a girlfriend and possibly create a family. How do you get out of a fake family into a real family?
New job.
Ah.
Good idea.
I've got a hypothetical. Let's say there was somebody at your work who, you know, their back was to most of the workers, and they routinely sat kind of with their head on their hands, and occasionally you heard a snore. What would how would you set that up for explanation?
Caught snoring. Again, if you know you're a snorer, then that's where your foundational lies come in,
yeah.
Right? Just in meetings, just go. They'll think you'll have some nasal dripper, I don't know, something.
Okay, pro question. Do you go with the fake Facebook account? And also, do you need a fake LinkedIn account?
Wow, now I have not applied these skills to the new world of social media, but I like the fake Facebook account. That's absolutely brilliant. Because then you can make your work people your friends, and oh, I like that. LinkedIn? I would say the same. I would apply it to the resume building strategy, you know, and try to get, surprisingly, on LinkedIn, just ask people you've never heard of for endorsements. They'll give them to you. Especially if you promise to give them one back. Endorser.org, if you've never heard of it. It's fake LinkedIn endorsements. It's wonderful. Well, I think we are out of time, but good discussion, too.